The nation's largest cannabis business brokerage, Green Life Business Group, gears up to be featured at the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference as one of the set speakers on our M&A panel. Green Life currently has over 150 exclusive cannabis businesses available on the market today, covering over 10 states. To see more of their exclusive listings, visit greenlifebusiness.com. Benzinga's Cannabis Capital Conference returns to Miami Beach on April 11th and 12th. I may be biased, but I'm telling you, this event is a can't miss. Join us to build the foundation of your next game-changing deal with CEOs and decision-makers from leading companies in the industry. We're talking about the next wave of businesses, strategies from the most profitable businesses, and exactly what investors are looking for in a challenging market. Go to bzcannabis.com to meet your next investor, co-founder, and new friends. A little pro tip from me, right now tickets are $1,000 cheaper than prices at the door. Get yours now. What's up, y'all? Welcome in. We are episode one of the week. We are episode however many millions overall, we are not slowing down. Javier Hasse, international man of mystery, my Argentinian action figure best friend, here to talk some news with us, but we have two amazing interviews for you all today. Thank you so much for tuning in to our podcast, to our show. We have Bradley Natras, CEO of Urban Grow, NASDAQ-listed UGRO, and Mike Gorenstein, CEO of Kronos Group, CRON on the NASDAQ. Going to be two amazing guys to chat with today in a tumultuous market a week before the best cannabis event in the industry. Javi, what's up, my friend?
Very cool. I mean, I'm excited. I think our two NASDAQ guests today are really pulling an audience. We got great numbers, people watching on YouTube, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, maybe on Twitch. I don't know.
Touch yourself a little bit, Javi. Why not?
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
This is awesome. Let's get into some news real fast, and then let's get to the interviews. I think that is the way to go through this.
What are you thinking today? What's on your mind?
I mean, the big news is this week is out of the NBA, right? The fact that players are no longer going to be tested, that they're allowed to consume cannabis. Now they're also allowed to invest in cannabis businesses. And this, of course, is putting pressure on other leagues such as the NFL. But very interesting developments around the NBA and the WNBA. What do you think?
You know, I'm just curious, like with the somewhat dried up capital, like they allow them to invest in cannabis. I'm curious just what that will be anytime soon, right? Like I'm just like very curious. Like I understand the partnerships aspect. I'm curious if maybe Maps and Kevin Durant dive in further, right? You know, or Kevin Durant signs on with a plant touching company. I don't know. I think there could be a lot of things that come from this, but that particular point, I'm like, will we see anything right now?
I don't know. I mean, what they're saying is, you know, active players can do stuff with their money, right? Like, I think that is fair.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it shouldn't be a thing. I just trying to look at the reaction there. That said, you know, another bit of news we didn't get to cover last week, but we knew it was going to happen. My home state of Kentucky coming in strong. Number 38 medical cannabis state market coming out there. We should also hear about Delaware coming up. Honestly, guys, there's still catalysts
happening. Huge week last week.
Yeah. Honestly, it was a great week for cannabis.
Big moves. Some moves in Washington, I believe, Utah. You know, it was an awesome week for sure. Delaware, Maryland, Kentucky, Washington, and Utah all making moves in a positive direction. More to come there for sure. Let's move to Latin America for a second. You know, I like my Latino news. Flora Growth Corp, FLGC on the NASDAQ, announced the certification of its cannabis medicine or compound formulation laboratory, Flora Lab 4. So basically now they are allowed to sell prescription cannabis medicines in Colombia, approved by INVIMA, which is their FDA. And another big news item out of Latin America, Brains Biosutical, the world's largest manufacturer of natural cannabinoid APIs, or active pharmaceutical ingredients, signed a supply agreement with Prati Donadusi, one of the largest drug manufacturers in South America, to provide products in Brazil, approved by their FDA equivalent as well. So another big move there. I think, you know, the Brazilian market is just massive to not look at it.
Yeah, that's exciting. Both of those companies, Flora Growth and Brains, will be at our cannabis event next week.
Look at that.
Yeah, look at that plug right there. Seamless. BZCannabis.com. Get your tickets in that QR code top right-hand corner of your screen or left-hand corner. I never know how mirroring is happening. But in the corner of your screen, there's a QR code. Make sure to hit that. That I believe that links to a discount code for tickets to the event from our show.
Nice.
We have multiple federal politicians. Most, if not all, of your major plant-touching companies will have representation there from leadership, ancillary players, services, hundreds of investors. It's going to be a heck of a 2 days, the April 11th and 12th, and then April 13th, we're doing it again for psychedelics. So it's going to be an exciting few days next week at the Fountain Blue in Miami. If you just want an excuse for a vacation in the middle of April, I don't see how this could get any easier for you just to scan that QR code with your phone.
Here's one more to sweeten the pot. We have Twitter and Uber speaking as well, talking about the connection between big tech, the mainstream, and cannabis industry.
Amen. It's going to be awesome. A lot of things to think about next week, a lot of networking, a lot of content. That said, Javi, anything else that you feel we should hit on today? I did see, I just have to point it out. I know in, I would say, a different time, this may not be news that inspires hope, but iSpire Technologies IPO today through Thursday. It is somewhat cannabis related, being an ancillary, I think, vape tech play. ISPR, I believe, is what they're going to list on. I haven't followed it throughout the day. I've been busy for the event, but it's just nice to see those three letters associated with this industry right now.
Indeed. I mean, finally, it's been a while. A brutal day for Green Lane today, if we're going to be honest. Yeah. Good news out of Germany, but let's get to our guests and maybe if we have time at the end.
What a transition. Yeah. All right. Let's bring over Bradley Natras, CEO of Urban Grow, NASDAQ listed UGRO, and always the best dressed man in the room. Let's bring him right over. Brad, welcome in, my friend. How are you?
Great. How are you doing, gentlemen? Thanks for having me.
Doing good, sir. You are always welcome here. It's always good to catch up with Urban Grow. Just do us a favor, my friend. Just give us a quick one-liner, as always, on what Urban Grow does.
Urban Grow is a engineering, procurement, and construction company specializing in controlled environment ag. And happy to say we built that model over the last 2 years, and we've been going to market for the last 3 months, and we're winning. Everything's going great.
Amen. Now, you're here to talk a little bit about your earnings and, you know, your performance over the last year, you know, potentially over the last quarter, if you want to dive into that, albeit, you know, only what's public, I would imagine. But tell us a little bit about 2022 and what your company did.
Sure. Off to a strong start at the beginning of 2022, made two acquisitions throughout the year, acquired a construction firm based in Colorado, and also an engineering firm based in Houston. So with the those additions, we had the trifecta, the full professional services offering with horticulturists, architects, construction management, and engineers, all different types of engineers, all under one roof. So today we have close to 160 employees and are working on design build projects and professional services projects in multiple sectors. You know, that the diversification was key for us in 2022 as the cannabis industry softened a little bit near the tail end of the year. For us, you know, that was seen in our equipment revenues, and the pullback on CapEx spending definitely had its effect on all of the ancillary companies, and we weren't immune to it.
Mm-hmm. You said you're winning. Can you elaborate on that? Like, what you need to back it up. If you're going to say we're winning, I need to know why.
Sure, sounds great. So we had our trough quarter in Q3. We weren't quite diversified enough at that point in order to overcome the drop in equipment revenues. for Urban Grow in 21. Equipment was 80% of our business. Last year, it was 50% of our business, and most of that was in the first half of the year. So for Urban Grow to be back into a adjusted EBITDA positive position, which we're targeting as soon as possible this year, hopefully as soon as Q2, we had to make sure we made up for that weakness in equipment sales. And we did that through diversification. We're operating now in the CEA space, both cannabis and then also produce-focused vertical farming. And then in the non-CEA space, which we refer to as commercial, we're working on commercial projects with leading consumer packaged goods companies. We're in the hospitality industry, working on some design builds in that space as well, and healthcare as well. But that's allowed us, when I say winning, you know, we're winning contracts, we're building our business. It's evidenced through our backlog. We finished the year 40% up, $93 million in signed contracts that we've started executing in 2023, and looking forward to continuing to share that increased backlog, because it represents, Javi, really who Urban Grow is in the subsequent 2 to 6 quarters. So winning, building backlog, and now executing, and we're all focused on delivering results for clients and also our shareholders.
You know, I don't like to softball, right? That's because I'm Latino. I like soccer. Softball is boring. Jay Rice says here, MSOS, MJ, and CGC all-time lows. And your stock performance has been decent this year. Like in a brutal market, it's like what do you think is driving the stock performance of Ugo versus some of its industry peers who are also delivering strong fundamentals, who are also growing? Some of them are also winning, but they're maybe not being appreciated in the market in the same way, right? What do you think is driving a more positive market sentiment for Urban Grow?
Well, Javi, I do feel we're still a tremendous investment opportunity. Our backlog is more than 3 times our market cap right now. It's about delivering results and getting back to positive adjusted EBITDA, and we're laser focused on that. I feel the reception from the investment community to the fact that we are diversified. You know, we're not 100% reliant on controlled environment ag and specifically cannabis. That diversification's allowed us to keep our team in place. We have a team in place right now to far exceed the guidance that we laid out of 100 to 120 million in fiscal year 2023. But we've been able to keep that team focused because we have them focused in other sectors. And when the cannabis market begins to heat up, like we hope it does in the tail end of the year, we'll be ready to service it from a design build standpoint. But you know, I think it's really important to note, when it comes to services, architecture, engineering, we're very busy in cannabis right now. And those are high margin services, but they're just not high revenue producing services. But the overall issue, as it is looked at from Urban Grow standpoint, is there's 9 key states, and these states are tied up in regulatory delays. They've legalized whether medicinal or adult use, and then there's been lawsuits or other hurdles that have to be jumped over. And it really locked up the state. So our clients are taking it through the design stage, but until that license is awarded, their funding partners are not going to release the funds for them to build the facilities. Once the licenses are awarded, like they were recently in New Jersey, our clients are successfully transitioning to the design build stage with Urban Grow. And eventually for us, 3 to 6 months after that begins, it'll transition over into an equipment contract as well. And we can start to realize the fruits of those benefits. But it's all about just loosening up the regulatory delays in each of these 9 states.
I have a quick follow-up, but I know Javi's curious about what states are those 9 states.
You read my mind.
Yeah. So you got New York, New Jersey. I already talked about New Jersey, Connecticut, Missouri, Florida, Alabama, and Georgia, Maryland, and I know I'm missing one of them. Can you fill in the blank for me, guys?
Kentucky. No, kidding.
Yeah. Kentucky. All right.
Yeah, we'll there we go.
Kentucky. Hey, we're Ohio. Really excited about Kentucky. The CEO Florida. Of the engineering firm that that we acquired, he's has his Kentucky roots, and he took his engineering degree there as well. So look for big things for Urban Grow in Kentucky.
I love that, man. Are you, you know, this isn't the question I was going to ask, but just really quickly, do you guys have a big footprint in the hemp part of this space?
We do not. No, we don't. It's predominantly every legalized state in the U.S. on the cannabis side. And then, of course, we opened our office last year in Q2 and have a team in Europe based in our Netherlands office. You started to talk about Germany, Pavi, at the start there. And, you know, we're well positioned to take advantage of those of the regulatory progression there when it presents itself, for sure.
We should have news in like 2 weeks, as last I heard today. But what's interesting, I think, you know, kind of piggybacking a little bit on what Elliot just brought up, I think, you know, what you do at Urban Grow is clearly focused on cannabis, right? Controlled agriculture, like indoor growing does not make a lot of sense for hemp, I believe. I might be wrong. There might be some places on earth where you do need more controlled agriculture for hemp. But ultimately, yeah, I don't think it's pretty cost effective, right? Is that like the main reason why you're not so active in hemp? Is it that you just haven't explored it?
It is, you know, and, you know, if we were involved in the hemp side, it would be more perhaps design building an extraction facility. And I'm sitting next week at Benzinga, I'm sitting on a panel. It's focused on supply chain, but the CEO of, I think it's Floral Growth.
Floral Growth.
Yeah, he'll be sitting on there as well. So looking forward to learning more about their business and how it's progressing down south in South America.
And you're international, so it's super cool. So I just want to leave our investors with some knowledge about the year and really just periods ahead of us. You chatted a little bit about, you know, looking to get profitable. You chatted a little bit about, you know, what you're waiting for on the cannabis space. Is there anything else you can, you know, enlighten us on the year ahead that Urban Grow is focused on? Because it seems to me that maybe M&A won't be as big of a focus in this year as it was last year in your quest for diversification. So I was just curious, what will this year be about for you?
We have raised the funds we needed to grow. We made the acquisitions that we needed to. It's now about delivering results to our shareholders and making sure we give our clients a phenomenal experience, a single point of accountability or responsibility experience on their design build. But Urban Grow is now focused on design build in all of the sectors in which we operate, and look forward to bring the value added knowledge that we have from working on over a thousand projects, over 500 facilities over the last 9 years, and bringing that to our clients. But it's time to walk the talk at Urban Grow and deliver on the guidance that I laid out last week, 100 to 110 million and negative 3 million adjusted EBITDA to positive. It's about not only meeting, but exceeding those results and delivering good returns to our shareholders. And again, that starts with good experiences to our clients.
Amen. Bradley Natras, CEO of Urban Grow, NASDAQ listed UGRO. It's always a pleasure, my friend, to have you with us. Excited to see where we are a year from today. Hopefully the industry is in a better place, but we know you guys are working toward a very strong company. So I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much, Joe. See you next week. Thanks for having
me. Yes, sir. See you on the beach, my friend.
All right, take care.
See you on the beach.
Good vibes, man. You got to have good vibes in this industry. We need it. That said, you know, something, just a note from me on these ancillary, you know, style of companies for our investors here, mm-hmm. is that there's just as much need for streamlining operations. And you should be looking for that in those types of stocks and plays. And I think Brad does a great job. You know, you read about it in Grow Generation's earnings report, their quest for, you know, being able to control their expenses and and you know, maintain profitability. And they took a hit for it last year, but they have actual steps toward that this year.
Very, very decent report. Totally.
Yeah, exactly.
Google's are maintaining a buy.
Perfect. I mean, it just goes to show you that the whole industry is adjusting if the company is run by a savvy leadership team.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to compare, right? But I was just mentioning, right? Greenlane, another ancillary company, reported Q4 revenue today, 23% down sequentially for revenue, right? It's been struggling for a while.
They did get
right?
rid of some of their businesses, though, didn't they? Didn't they divest a few of their businesses? Oh, that's not fully surprising.
Yeah, no, it's not a full picture, but my point is you know, there's certain ancillary businesses that are certainly thriving in this tough environment.
Right, and you know, they're ready to, I would say, be competitive. We'll say that said, enough of our pandering and hearing ourselves talk, Javi, as much as we love ourselves. We need to bring on our next guest. Very, very excited to bring on Mike Gorenstein, CEO of the Kronos Group, NASDAQ-listed CRON. Awesome. Let's do it.
Mr. Mike Gorenstein, you know what? I like to think of I was thinking about this the other day, and I was, you know, who's the last man standing, right? Of the old school Canadian CEOs. I was chatting with IRS at Avicon, and we're like, dude, how many others are out there that survived the many cycles? So before you introduce yourself, before you tell us how you're doing today, where you're calling from, what is the secret to longevity in an industry like this one?
I mean, look, I'd say you treat everything like it's, you know, your own money, because, you know, functionally it should be. You should do the same thing you would do whether, you know, it's your own. I think you've got to obviously care and be passionate. And then it's planning, right? I think, you know, we've kind of always been a little bit of a contrarian. Like, we took a very different view from the beginning. That it didn't make sense to sort of just build out endless, you know, capacity and hope that things would come, to try to sort of dominate the world and be an empire builder. I think people always expected or you know, would ask us why we're not doing it. But I think the secret is, I don't know if it's a secret. I think we've been kind of transparent that you have to be patient. You have to, you know, take what's there, and you have to focus on, you know, what you think you'll be best at and, you know, build that way. So, I don't know. I've never really thought of it as how to survive. I've thought of it as how to, you know, how to thrive. How do you give something better to consumers? And I think if you focus on consumers, the rest sort of falls in place.
I think that's worthy of a follow-up question here, man. A little bit about Kronos. Obviously, you know, they're for cannabis investors, they probably don't need this, but we do have a lot of investors that somewhat look at this industry agnostically. So can you give us a sense of where Kronos sits in the grand scheme of cannabis?
Sure. So we are, I think, very rare in terms of the way that we approach cannabis within the industry, but extremely typical and traditional for other industries. So you hear a lot of talk about being a consumer packaged good company, and that's really the way we focus on it. So we don't want to be the ingredient supplier. We don't want to be the retailer. You know, we want to make great products. We want to kind of value add when we manufacture and make the products, and deliver them to consumers, and then work with retail partners, work with farmers. We can give them genetics to make sure it, you know, fits exactly what we want, what we think the consumers want. But ultimately, we are a cannabis CPG company. We are a brand-focused company.
And then where do you operate?
So our two biggest markets today are Canada and Israel. We also have a U.S. CBD business. We have some distribution in Europe, and we do have a stake in a company in Australia and in Colombia as well.
What's up in Israel? Like they pronounce it. It's a tough one. You have to roll the R's there. It's the opposite of the Latino thing. But like, what's up there, right? Why is it an important market for Kronos?
Sorry, Israel?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was just playing around with the pronunciation.
Israel? Yeah, Israel. It's look. I think it's the most important international medical market today. So, you know, everyone always likes to look at what's the future potential, what can something turn into, what will it be? But Israel is, if you look at today, what is, you know, really the most meaningful market? Where are you seeing the most growth now? Where do you have the most commitment? It's Israel.
It's not the UK or Germany or nothing of that nature.
Those have the potential to be the same. You know, a lot of markets have the potential to get much bigger. And I don't think that Israel will be the biggest market forever, but still, Israel's a market, you know, population that's larger than Colorado. And unlike Colorado, when you think about potential, you don't have the same type of illicit market competition because, you know, you just, the amount of security that you have in Israel, the amount of infrastructure, it's really difficult to get in. It's not as easy. You don't have Croptober because you can't go in the desert and start cultivating. It just doesn't work. And then if you look at the usage rates, you don't get much higher than Israel anywhere you go in the world. So I think it's a really good market. It's also important. You know, this is a place where THC was first, you know, identified, right? First discovered. Mm-hmm. The R&D in Israel has been huge. It's a very, very passionate and, you know, and focused and supported by the government as far as a market. So, you know, when I think about markets today, you know, that sort of springboard you to the future, it's important to be in places where actively today you have a real market to tide you over while you wait for the Germanys, you know, UKs of the world.
Well, and I think there was a report this morning, actually, from Emergent Research, that the medical cannabis market globally will be somewhere north of $28 billion by 2028. So I mean, just your thoughts there. Is that something that rings true to you? And how important does Israel play to that?
You know, I also think it's important to look at progress that markets make. I think other governments, you know, companies, everyone looks and sees what's a market today, how is it performing? And then that's a framework that's used and you pull those pieces. It's actually the reason Canada was such an important market early on. It was one of the first major, the first major market to legalize, at least among G7 countries. So it became super important. Not that, I mean, Canada and California, similar size, but it's so important because of what it means. And I think Israel being such a large market in terms of the growth you've seen over 2 years, it does show if you put in a good framework, you can see the results. So, you know, when you set up supply chain, when you want to get your products out and you think about how to grow into when you get the $28 billion medical market, you want markets that are working now. And of course, the infrastructure that Cronos has and what we've been setting up for, we're ready to pounce on any market as it opens. But, you know, I've been patient for a long time. When I see a market that's good and it's open, you know, we're the whole team's really excited for it.
I love that. I mean, you gotta be somewhat aggressive, intelligently in this industry. I will say, you mentioned the word Canada, and I have to ask, you know, there's a lot of opinions about the Canadian market, and I'd love to hear from one of the major players in that market. What is the Canadian market today in terms of health? Is it in crisis, as some CEOs would say? Is it an issue in terms of sales continually somewhat, you know, falling, albeit, you know, up and down, but falling? How is the Canadian market doing? What are they doing, you know, maybe to further the industry there?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd say we could definitely use more support and reaction from the government. I would say it is in crisis mode. For us, you know, as a company, we're still taking market share. I think we're performing well by being very focused on a specific segment, focused on not being a value/discount brand by having superior and differentiated products. You know, that helps, right? We've been able to take number one share in edibles with only having gummies out, you know, top three in flower. Really top 10 in every category with one brand, which I think is unique when you have others that have, say, 10 brands out there and maybe lose focus. But I think Canada's going through what every market that matures goes through. So people always, you know, I always laugh when people say, like, well, we don't want to, like, when we look at states, we're going to avoid California, Colorado, Oregon, Washington. We like the markets like New Jersey. Well, you know, the big difference between New Jersey or Illinois or, you know, Massachusetts, like, these markets are just newer. Eventually, others are going to come in the space. You know, you're going to see this curve where prices will be driven down. People will have to exit the market. And the ones that are the most efficient, the ones that make the best products, they'll be the survivors. And then you see things kind of lift back up. So I think Canada is going through the same thing the mature markets are going through in the U.S. It's painful, but also, you do, you know, you, unfortunately, you won't ever have 500 companies that survive and thrive. It's just, unfortunately, the way market dynamics work. It's a very competitive, and some of those, you know, don't necessarily fail and go away. Some get bought, some, you know, they merge. But that's kind of where we are in Canada. It's starting to mature quite a bit. You're seeing, I think, half of the bankruptcies in the whole country are cannabis companies. You know, it's a tough place. And if you didn't prepare for a tough battle, you're hurting right now.
I want to switch gears for a little bit here, right? One of the big fears that many people had when we legalized cannabis, right? It's big alcohol, big pharma, big tobacco are gonna come after us, right? And that is not really a fantasy, right? That has been happening for a while, and they haven't screwed the industry so far, right? I know Altria invested $1.8 billion into Cronos back in 2019. This is a two-parter. One is, what's your relationship with Altria nowadays? And what is your view on tobacco as a part of the cannabis industry? What kind of role do you think they will play? Will they eventually take over? Are these fears justified, or will it just go like, okay, we'll just diversify our investments?
Yeah, look, I can tell you how I looked at it. It's funny because I do remember early on, one of the questions you always got was, like, what do you do if, you know, big tobacco enters? And it's so scary. And I remember back, when Constellation entered, did the deal with Canopy, everyone got really scared and said, oh, what's going to happen? And I kind of put those two things together. I was like, well, people are scared that someone got, big beer, but I would be way more scared if someone got, big tobacco. And so rather than be afraid of it, it's like, well, we got to go find them, and we got to make this happen. But no, I don't think it's something to fear. I think if you look at all the problems, and I know you hear people say that, like, these big companies are lobbying against cannabis and, you know, they hate it. I can tell you one way to, if you're looking to shut something down, you don't start pouring billions of dollars into the industry. That's not going to, that usually doesn't work out. And I think if you want acceptance, you want these institutional mainstream players to come in and support the space. Even within any established industry, even look at big beverage, look at soda. The idea that, yes, it's dominated by Coke and Pepsi, sure, they distribution, but all the new brands, there's new companies that are creating them, and then they get bought and they go in. So it's not like it in any way shuts out small businesses or entrepreneurs. So I'd say, look, the relationship with Altria, they're still our largest shareholder by far. They still three direct, so the structure is the same as it's always been. Relationship, I think, is the same from the beginning. I think it's always been clear, and they understood this is not going to be a short-term investment. It's something that would be long-term. We'd actually talked early on where I said I thought there would be a lot of struggles in Canada. We needed to make sure we're prepared for really what would be a long battle before you start seeing other markets open. And they think that, like we do, it's going to be products that win. And as far as how I think the big companies will fit in, well, it depends what kind of big companies. So if you look at like the Circle K's or 7-Elevens of the world, sorry, Couche-Tard, I think they're going to be involved in retail. I think it makes sense because they are great retailers. That's what they do. If you look at, the Altrias, Philip Morris, BAT, Constellation, Anheuser-Busch, I think they're going to look at what they're best at, for big tobacco that, looks at pre-rolls, vapor, how do you use your contract farmers, give them genetics, and work with the other ag companies to be able to bring things in the same model and then distribute to retailers. So I think that's where you see that. For the beer companies, they'll probably look at beverage because that's what works for them. And they'll be the ones, because they have distribution, on how to deliver beverages. I think every vertical will have its own support. And then there'll be pure play cannabis players that just get really big and work in those verticals. But if you keep seeing pricing pressure and you keep seeing how do you compete with the illicit market, the way to do that is to have infrastructure you can plug into on a national scale so that you offset that tax burden and the quality control burden with having scale. And it's really difficult to build to that level. You could take $5 billion and still not have the infrastructure some of the big companies have. So I think it's an important part for the survival of the industry. It won't be the only part of the industry, but I think you do need support from those that have been doing it to be able to get things, to a stable framework.
Cronos is somewhat of an OG, I would think we could say, in this space, right? You know, but I think there is an argument about the first mover advantage being the exact opposite. It's been the first mover disadvantage. But how have you guys been able to stay ahead of obstacles such as you're accessible to U.S. investors, and every time Chuck Schumer tends to go to the bathroom, your stock moves? So I'm just curious.
You know, it's fun. We haven't needed to raise cash in a long time, and we've always been
Did I freeze?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing.
Okay. Neither of us froze. I was really interested in what he was about to say, though. That's a bummer.
Let's see what happens.
There you are. Mike, sorry.
Oh, yeah. It was you? Sorry.
Yeah, you're back.
I heard Chuck Schumer going to the bathroom, and I think you scared my internet connection.
That's understandable. But you were just starting, and then it froze. So back to you, man.
So, yeah, look, we've always been been like, I guess for when you think about maybe like what we're like for, you know, OGs, we're always, I think, a little bit more conservative and measured. So we've never really, we've tried to not overextend ourselves, and we have not needed to raise capital in a long time. So the stock price moving is really more about, you know, your short-term thinking. Long-term, it doesn't really change anything, right? So we don't need to use our cash stock as currency because we have cash if we don't like where the stock is. We've got a famously long run rate where we, you know, it would be a long time before we would need to ever go back to the market for at least for survival. So you kind of ignore it, you know, and you focus on the things that matter. You take your own KPIs, you know, how are our products doing? How are we doing relative to competition? Do we feel like we're hitting our growth plan? You know, where are we in terms of profitability? So those are the things that you focus on. And this, like I said earlier, kind of comes down to planning. You can't approach things on hope. You know, you have to look at every scenario and what can happen. You have to be prepared for the worst. You owe it to your investors. You owe it to your employees. You owe it to your partners, your customers. It's just, it's an important part of it. And I think a lot of people kind of got away from that. There was a lot of irrational exuberance, and everyone thought, okay, like it's like safe. Like when people ask me about safe, I tell people like, why does safe matter? I'm like, well, because all the stocks will go up. Like, but what does that do to the business? What's that actually change? Right? Like, what would the Schumer bill, what does it change and how does it affect your business? And sometimes people get lost in that because they think the stock price is actually what drives the value. And it's really not. The stock price should be a reflection in an efficient market of what your company's doing. Your company doesn't follow your stock price. So maybe, you know, rephrase is how do you make sure that people don't watch the stock versus watching the business? And that, you know, is something that, again, you have to be in a good capital position and plan for.
Do you think that's an industry kind of, it's just an unfortunate part of the cannabis space right now? And honestly, for retail investors in general, it's a bit of how they think, you know, in technical investing anyway. And retail investors are such a pillar of cannabis investing. So is it just that, you know, it's somewhat of a wait until a lot of these larger institutions do dive in into the, at least from the U.S., from the U.S. side?
Look, what I would say is if you watch any of these movies about like famous entrepreneurs, unless you want to like dive into like actual just investors, you know, if you watch like The Big Short, right? Mm-hmm. Anything that's a good investment or trade, and you look at like Michael Burry sort of, you know, like hauled up freaking out because the short's getting harder and people that bet on things. When you're looking for one major event that's a payoff, if you think you're fundamentally right, part of like why you do so well when investing is you have to have a different belief in the market, right? The things will be priced in. So if most people think that's not going to get legalized, right? And you believe it is, it's of course it's not going to happen every day, but when it gets legalized, if you think that's the big value creation event, you get a payoff. If everyone thinks it's legalized, that's when it gets hard to buy in. That's when it gets really expensive. So, you know, I think, look, it can be tough, but also, you know, everything is risk reward. You have to decide, do you want to go in and do you believe it's going to get legalized? Do you believe these companies will become profitable? Do you believe that cannabis will be a branded product company or industry? Or do you think it's just something that will never work? If you believe in the industry and you're broadly invested and you're disciplined and careful about how you enter, I think you do extremely well. If you're looking for a short-term payoff, look, there's a reason institutions don't, you know, buy these things that go all in 1 month. There are institutions that are invested in some places where they can. But yeah, there'll be an avalanche one day where things will shoot up. You just have to make sure you're being responsible at how you prepare for it and what your expectations on timing are.
Well said. Thank you for spitballing with us there. Honestly, I know that's not easy for a CEO of a publicly traded company to do, but it's very helpful for our investors to really just take a breath sometimes and hear how to be due diligent. Sorry, Javi, you're about to say something.
No, nothing. Not at all. I was just agreeing with you. Honestly, super, super interesting conversation. I appreciate the candor. And I think we'll see you in Miami, right?
Yes, maybe. We will.
Yes.
Yeah.
So excited, Mike.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah. See you here in, I guess, it's a week.
Today, Tuesday, we will see you. Yeah, it's going to be fun. All Mike right. Gorenstein, CEO of the Kronos Group, NASDAQ-listed CRON. Much appreciate your time today. So just a start. Would love to have a follow-up discussion, as I'm sure there's a lot of news over the next several quarters that we're going to be able to talk about and get your expert opinion on. But until then, my friend, we'll see you in a week. Investors, make sure to check out CRON. Until then, we'll see you later. Awesome. That was two great interviews today, dude.
Yeah, man. What a great show. I don't know. Maybe we're too. I don't know. I enjoy it. I hope you do too. I hope you get some of that energy when we are enjoying the show.
Yeah, well, it's super interesting for us to hear from somebody who's directly affected by a lot of the things we talk about on a daily basis. That said, I do want to just pump ourselves up a little bit. Cannabis Daily, my podcast, every morning has hit over 105,000 downloads.
Nice. Insane.
Thank you all so much for listening to that every morning. My face, I'm sure, is painful for you to turn on, but you still listen to me, and I thank you so much for it. I think Cannabis Insider is around 40,000 downloads. Obviously, far fewer episodes for that. But this podcast, I think, is the heart and soul of what Benzinga is, which is meant to connect investors to the cannabis space and how to grow your wealth with cannabis information at your fingertips.
Love that, man. I'm checking the stats now. I'm curious as to how many downloads we've had.
All right, we'll do that after. Thank you guys so much for listening, Javi. I love you, my brother. As always, appreciate you.
Too.
Great show today. We will see you guys again Thursday at 4 Eastern time for our last episode before we take a week off, as Javi and I will be in Miami. We'll be back the following week for more episodes, but tune in on Thursday, 4 Eastern time. Subscribe to Benzinga Cannabis Daily Newsletter. Have a great rest of your day. That's it. Peace.